The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
On today's show, we answer all the questions you asked that aren't too weird, awkward, or annoying in our annual holiday mailbag episode.
And also, that don't require too much preparation.
Yeah, oh, sorry. That's a big one.
And also, our answer can last for 2 weeks.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
But first, check out Cricket's fantastic new podcast, Radiolingo, that looks at the ways language plays a role in our lives, from swearing to subtitles and everything in between. And if you haven't yet, highly recommend you binge listen to Mother Country Radicals, a personal, politically charged account of a counterculture group of young activists. That's such a funny way to describe it.
Didn't they blow stuff up? Counterculture, yeah, very counter. Counterculture, counter foundations, counter
Here's the thing.
Doors and windows.
Mother Country Radicals is one of my favorite podcasts we've done at Crooked. It just won at Tribeca. It's one of Vulture's top 10 podcasts of 2022. It is about a group of revolutionaries in the late 60s, known as the Weather Underground, for anyone who paid attention to the 2008 campaign about Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. It's fantastic, and you should listen to it over the holidays if you can. And you can listen to Radiolingo, also, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, before we start, wanted to say thank you to everyone who stepped up in 2022 through Vote Save America. You helped raise over $5.6 million and fill over 46,000 shifts, which contributed to winning 52 races from Senate to House to governors to secretaries of state, attorney generals, and more. Head to votesaveamerica.com not to donate, just to see all the work you've done.
Yeah, just take a victory lap.
We're going to have a full recap there, and you can just sort of bask in it. It's really nice. We got more work to do, so stay tuned for more ways to get involved in the new year. But for now, rest up and happy holidays from everyone at Vote Save America. Okay, let's get to the first question, which is from Matthew Kale. What was the most significant political event or story of 2022? Love it? Oh, you want Dan to take it?
Dan, yeah, you take it. I didn't highlight this one. Want me to think back on a whole year?
I mean, it has to be the overturning of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
Most political impact, affects the most people's lives, altered the course of the campaign, probably altered the course of politics for years to come.
That was obviously my first thought as well. But then I wanted to really... I wanted to think a little bit about it. What about, this could be a runner-up, or it could be, Putin's invasion of Ukraine?
Man, what a fucking godforsaken year this was.
I know. 2022 was right. We've been saying this since 2020 now.
You're saying this since 2017. Yeah. The hits keep coming.
One of these years, we're going to get a good year.
Yeah.
But I mean, where it's very, I think in the United States, certainly, it's Dobbs. Certainly.
Yeah.
And in terms of how it affected politics in the midterm campaign. Globally, we don't have any worldos here, but they might say that it's Putin's invasion of Ukraine. What it's the consequences for energy, for supply chains, for the global economy, for potential nuclear catastrophe. It's a lot.
One possible alternative, the canceling of CNN Plus.
That is a big one.
Which also led to the canceling of Chris Wallace Plus.
We will never know what was on Jake Tapper's bookshelf, a show that got canceled.
Man, that was a real...
Forgot about that. That is up there.
That candle burned bright.
Dobbs, Ukraine, CNN Plus.
That's right.
Twitter user Omnichronic asks, are Democrats learning to campaign on offense instead of from a defensive crouch? Two examples, Fetterman and Pritzker. They appeared to brush off the crime attacks and media narratives instead of constantly trying to refute them. Or is there just an exception for large men? Dan, you highlighted this one, so you can take this.
The answer is yes. I think J.B. Pritzker is great. I'm not sure how many points you get for winning in a plus 20 Democratic state. But if you look across the map, whether it's Warnock or Fetterman or Kelly, even Democrats were on offense. They handled the attacks and they won. And there's been a strategic shift since 2018, I think, certainly since 2016, that hopefully continues forward in the party. And there's some models in some of the campaigns cited here that Democrats can follow going forward.
Yeah, one important part of the model is run against absolute fucking cretinous morons.
Yeah, that helps. Helps a lot. I do think, just reading this question again, they appear to brush off the crime attacks and media narratives instead of constantly trying to refute them. Both of them did refute those attacks, and they did so in smart ways, right? Like, Fetterman ran an ad refuting the crime narrative that said he gave a second chance to those who deserve it, right? So he didn't run away from that. Nonviolent offenders, marijuana users. But he also then said in the ad, I voted with law enforcement 90% of the time. J.B. Pritzker, he called a crime ad that was run against him racist because it was showing black men robbing a white woman. But then he also ran an ad that touted his hiring of new police officers. So I think there was a way that Democrats handled, whether it was an attack on crime, on immigration, that wasn't just ignoring it or saying, oh, this doesn't make, you know, or saying like, you know, inflation's in people's minds or we're not going to pay attention to this. The weaknesses that Democrats might have had or the attacks that came from Republicans, I think all of the winning candidates from Warnock to Fetterman to Pritzker to everyone in between, they did a really good job of punching back at the negative attacks and then also putting forward their own vision and their own attacks on their opponents.
I think what Fetterman did was really interesting because he made a case for compassion. He didn't just say, no, what you're saying about me is completely false. It's not based in reality at all. He said, actually, this is an unfair smear.
Yeah.
But here's why it's okay to think compassionately about people that have been behind bars. Like, here's why it's okay to have been in favor of parole. Like, here's why it's okay to make that part of your values, to make that part of who you are. And I think he was such a strong candidate and people felt they knew him so well that he was able to do both, which I think was really important.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Fetterman also, and a lot of Democrats also, stated explicitly that they supported funding the police. And where there is a nuanced difference between how this was handled by some in 2020 and how it was handled in 2022 is, in 2020, we denied the attack, making the strategic error to say, a lot of Democrats were, I don't support defunding the police. I don't support defunding the police, which causes voters to say, did you say defunding the police? And in 2022, where they simply either used law enforcement in their ads or said they supported funding the police or putting more cops on the street. But in a context that includes criminal justice reform, police accountability, et cetera.
There were lots of questions like this one from Jay Smith. Can you explain why the Democrats couldn't get the rail workers sick days? So for folks who haven't paying attention to the story, and we have not had a chance to cover this on Pod Save America, so we'll up until now. So the rail workers and the railroads, Biden helped strike a deal between them in September. And there are, I think, 11 unions that represent rail workers. 7 signed off on the deal. 4 did not. There were continued negotiations and there was the threat of a strike that happened a few weeks ago. So this is what would have happened if the rail workers went on strike and it wasn't resolved. The economy could lose like $2 billion a day. 700,000 jobs a month would have been lost, plunge the whole country into recession. Chemical plants apparently would be the first to shut down. So, and we count on chemical plants to help us purify the water. So there would have been water issues.
Boy, that's ironic, isn't it?
After a week, there would have been food shortages. So like, you don't want a strike, right? Now the question is, so there was legislation in Congress to to avert a strike, to basically say that it's illegal to strike, right? It's a pretty intense step. So they were, and basically the legislation was just going to codify the deal that was struck between the unions and the rail industry in September. But many Democrats said we should also add 7 paid sick days, which is really what the workers wanted, as the in completely reasonable demand.
Disagree.
So it that part passed the House, and a couple Republican senators voted for it in the Senate, but not enough. So they couldn't get the sick days, but they got the rest of the deal. Now, could Biden have said, no, I'm going to demand the 6 days? Or I guess the other option is either Biden could have tried to demand that the sick days get included, which he has no power to do because Republican senators wouldn't have voted for it. Or Biden could have said, all right, well, then let them strike and we won't do the legislation. And then hopefully the rail workers and the railroads would just negotiate amongst themselves. I think probably the Biden administration thought, we don't want to take the chance that there's a strike even for a day or two or a week, because that could devastate the economy. What do you guys think? You guys have any takes on the rail, on the rail deal?
I think there are two things that are true. One, it was under this Senate essentially impossible to get the workers this paid sick leave they need. It is also true that more generally, Democrats, particularly Senate Democrats, should be more actively, vocally, and substantively supportive of workers and unions.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think this was every single quote from whether it was Biden or Pelosi or Schumer or whatever else was like, this is something that I don't want to do, but we feel like we're in a pretty extraordinary circumstance right here. And by the way, you know, the unions negotiated this deal in September and most of them signed off. So I think it sucks. What the rail workers were asking for was not only completely reasonable, but it's just like the fact that they only have like one paid sick day right now is insane for the jobs that they do. So it sucks. Twitter user Mint T asks, Senate map in 2024, how can we keep the chamber?
So you light as many candles as you can find.
Do what we've always done. Donate to Joe Manchin. Support him. Work for him. Volunteer for him. I mean, we have to win. If we lose nothing else and nothing else changes, we have to win 2 of the 3 of Montana, West Virginia, and Ohio.
And then hold Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Minnesota.
I mean, easy. It's obvious, right?
Or
pretty straightforward from here.
And then again, the only flip the two best flip opportunities, Florida and Texas with Ted Cruz.
Oh,
so that's it. That's the map, guys. And you're right. So basically lay off Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, which is tough. The newly independent Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah.
So you got to win those two races, help Sherrod Brown and John Tester in their very tough races. And then, I hope they get some extremist opponents, and then all the other states, all the senators and all the other states, you know, reelect them. It's a tough one.
It's going to be tough. Yeah. Just got to hope for some, I don't know. I don't even know how to hope for like a national condition that puts that, you know what I mean? Like that we feel like good about the whole map. That's feeling good about the entire map.
Yeah.
Which we have never felt before in our entire fucking lives.
I think we can get the House back though.
Yeah.
Okay.
House is very doable in 2024. We're back to the House. We were at the House in 2018, then we moved over to the Senate in 2022. We're back to the House.
Just gotta get New York right, and we're good.
House and the presidency. That's what we're focused on.
Show people in New York how to draw a map.
All right. And the most common political question we received was some version of this one from Instagram user Hag Heels. Who are the realistic Democratic frontrunners for 2024? Now, I noticed neither of you cowards highlighted this one in the document, but I did because we pushed off all the Joe Biden 2024 conversations during the midterm. I think Dan wrote a whole box on this one because we shouldn't be talking about this now. We got to focus on the midterms. Well, guess what? The midterms are over,
well,
boys.
Are you not?
It's always another
week.
There's
a big state Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. I don't want to distract from that.
Yeah, we talked to Ben Wickler about it. It is real. April 2023. Get ready.
So
April.
I'd like to introduce something to all of you, which is the position I will be taking. Look, we've heard of ride or die. I'm ride and die with Biden.
Oh, my God. I mean, do you want the answer? The answer is Joe Biden.
That's the answer to the question, who is the most realistic Democratic frontrunner for 2024?
He is options A, B, and C, people. He is running for re-election.
Seems like he is. There's the stories about like his campaign team, who's going to be the campaign manager, where it's going to be. It seems like he's moving forward, barring some family conversation over this break that that's unexpected, that goes in a way that I think probably even he didn't expect.
Dan, question for you.
Yes.
Do you think the reason, like, Minnesota wanted to be one of the first four states, do we think that that was a little bit of a, like, fuck you, Amy Klobuchar, no chance for you. We're not even going to give you, we're going to entertain the long shot idea that you're going to have a good jumping off point.
I don't know whether that was about Klobuchar, but there's no question South Carolina was a strong message to everyone else that if you want to challenge Joe Biden, which I don't think would happen under any circumstances, you would have to go through the state that he won overwhelmingly. And interestingly enough, the Biden folks have pushed back on criticism of this map from others saying, but it's only for 2024. We can revisit this in 2028, which makes it pretty clear it's a Biden map. But look, everyone who works for Joe Biden thinks he's running for re-election. They are planning his re-election. They are talking to people about his re-election. And also, everyone who's working for all the other people that the person who asked this question would like us to list right now thinks Joe Biden is running for re-election, and they are not doing the things you do when you think you're about going to launch a run for presidency in 2 months. They are not recruiting staff. They are not courting donors. They could change. It's up to Joe Biden and Joe Biden and his family, but he is planning on running for re-election, and everyone in the party is assuming that.
Yeah, and to the point about, you know, could someone challenge him? Most of the people that could challenge him, first of all, it's like Kamala Harris is not going to challenge him. Pete Buttigieg is not going to challenge him. They both work in the administration. Gavin Newsom has already, like, pinky swore promise to the White House up and down that he's not going to do it.
Hands are shaking, but he's not going to do it.
Gretchen Whitmer has said, like, absolutely no way. You know, so all of the, like you said, all of the possible challengers have basically already, even Bernie had said before, if Biden runs, I'm not challenging him.
Man.
So it's ride with Biden.
It's also like, yes, it's like, I understand why none of them wants to challenge and doesn't see a lot of hope in doing so. It also is a kind of an implicit acceptance of the Biden argument, which is basically like, hey, the situation today is exactly the same as the one in 2020. And until someone is able to make a better argument why they are a better general election candidate than Joe Biden, is there anyone that's been able to make an argument that says that they are better? We haven't heard it.
Yeah. So there we go. There we go.
So here we go. Here we go. And I, for one, am excited.
Biden Trump, Biden DeSantis. Who knows?
Look, this
Biden Kemp. Possibilities are endless.
These are matchups, not tickets, right?
No, yeah, it's,
oh boy. Biden Cinema?
I'm not just saying Biden Cinema. Yeah, right.
Okay, some fun stuff. Audrey O'Connor asks, what would be the better Christmas gift? Trump indicted by Garland or Clarence Thomas retiring?
This is easy. Come on, people. Get him off the fucking court. Guys.
I'm troubled by this question.
Me too.
And I'm troubled. I hope that no one else thinks that Trump being indicted is A, some like magic thing that like gets Trump out of our lives. It doesn't.
Just think about what, listen. Where do you think Hitler wrote that fucking book?
Okay.
Wasn't at home.
Whenever you raise Hitler comparisons, famously goes well.
Excuse me. At some point, it has to be allowed. We've got Nazis running around Mar-a-Lago
over here.
I'll put on a fucking ski mask and I'll blow your mind.
Oh, that would have been so funny. It would have been so funny for you to do this episode in a ski mask.
Didn't think of it till now. Fuck.
I mean, ultimately, you know, this is the marshmallow test for resistance Twitter. Obviously, it is the court.
Yes. Clarence Thomas retires. We finally, one of the worst Supreme Court justices in history, we replace with Biden. Joe Biden would get to replace that person. Yeah.
With Naomi Biden. Christmas. He appoints Naomi Biden
to Kyrsten Sinema.
Trump gets indicted and then runs for president anyway. Come on. Okay. I'm glad we just covered that. All right. There were a lot of White Lotus questions that we will not answer. Because we are, A, recording this before the finale, B, we don't want to spoil anything And C, we'd also have to be insane to answer what White Lotus character each of us is.
Oh, really? I actually thought that was a good one.
Yeah, I'm not. Okay, who you got then?
Let's keep moving.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. But Becky asked what I think is a safe one. How do you like this season of White Lotus compared to the last? And it is still hard because we haven't, we're recording this before the finale, so we haven't seen the finale yet. The finale, I guess, could
upend
everything.
Our views.
Yeah.
This season, I love White Lotus. This season has been riveting. I'm
riveting.
So
that was my word.
It's riveting.
That is what I thought.
And, you know, the first season was so, it was like this, it was shot during the pandemic, so it was really small, and you just like felt that smallness. It was really intimate.
Yeah.
And this is such a bigger season. It's just a more like it's more exciting in a lot of ways. It's just like a bigger world. And I the first season was so good and was so interesting, and there hadn't been a show like it. And this is like everything that you loved about the first season, but the stakes feel higher and the
more drama, more anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost knowing how the first season ended and what was at the core of it makes this more exciting, because you didn't really know what was going to happen the first time or what it meant. It's great.
That's true. And
this is an incredible feat to pull this off the second time around, because the thought was the first season seemed so great because no one ever done anything like this on television before. So now you're just going to do it again and do it better. And look, HBO
Mike
has
White.
Never screwed up a finale of a major show before, so I'm sure this is going to be great.
They land every plane. They're beautiful. They're incredible.
I can't wait to find out that the person in the ocean is Bran.
Spoiler!
It was Bran all along.
All right, Laris asks, what's everybody's favorite Taylor Swift song?
So I've said Exile for a long time.
Yeah,
I love the song Exile. It was on repeat for me when it came out. But, you know, Antiheroes Rising for me. I really love that song. I love that song. I think it's a really, I like the writing. I think it's like one of her best written songs.
Dan?
As you know, as I revealed a few weeks ago on our last mailbag, I'm very new to the Taylor Swift thing, so I really have a limited catalog. But the song that is most, so everything I have is from this album, almost, because I have not yet followed your instructions to listen to all the other albums. The song that is played in my house the most of all is Welcome to New York, because it's the one Kyla loves and insists we play all the time.
That is one of the favorites of the youngins. I got to go with 10 Minute All Too Well.
10 Minute All Too
10
Well.
10 Minute All
that.
Too Well. It's
Taylor's
a, it's
version.
A feat. It's a feat. Watch it, and she performs on Saturday Night Live. It's something. Sarah Skiwara asks, who was on your Spotify Wrapped top five?
Everyone's going to say all five? We're all going to say all five?
Sure.
Okay. I'll go first. I don't mind.
I don't love it, but...
Here we go. All right. I'll go 5-1.
Okay.
Number five, Orville Peck.
Okay.
A gay kind of country guy.
Cool.
Number four, I'll be honest, this isn't reflective. This is because I listen to one song.
I do the same thing.
I listen to one song so often that this band that I don't really know very much about rocketed up the charts. It's a band called Saint Motel that has a song called Happy Accident that I listen to a million times in a row some reason.
I have one of those this year too.
Number three, Miley Cyrus. Miley Cyrus, that live album is so good, as long as you skip the parts where she does some spoken word, and that is unbearable. It's like she does one of the best covers of Like a Prayer of all time.
Yeah, she does.
And then she says, let me tell you the meaning of this. Every person is a person. And get me out of this. Number two, Muna. Muna. You'll find out soon. It's not reached the straits yet. And then number one, Taylor Swift. Number one this year.
Same for me.
Wow.
Number one, Taylor Swift, Billie Eilish, The Anxiety, which is the song.
Boy, that is fucking on brand.
I know. No, the song Meet Me at Our Spot, which I listened to a million times. And then rounding out the list, Blippi and Encanto.
Yeah, sure. I think there should be a button you press that just says like almost like incognito mode for Spotify. Like, don't track this. What I'm doing right now is not for you.
Okay.
We don't talk about Bruno. A lot of play on my phone this year.
All right. Number one, Kendrick Lamar. Number two, Vince Staples. Number three, Pusha T. Number four, the Jolly Pops, who sing a song called Popsicles, which we listen to on repeat on the way to school and home every day for 6 months.
Okay.
And coming in at number five, and something I'm not proud of and really has not aged well, this is why I haven't shared my Spotify.
Wow. What's it going to be?
Kanye West.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. What are you going to do?
Honestly, there was like seven names it could have been.
Jordan Peterson. All right. Now that we did that, Russ asks, what video games is Lovett planning on tearing into over the holiday break? Callisto Protocol, maybe? Would love to see him play a horror game on Twitch.
I want you to know something. I want you to know something. It was this very question that got me excited. You reminded me that this is something that I could do for the entire break, and I now will because of this question. So I still have to go back. I gave up on Elden Ring. It was a busy time, and I got into it. Then I fell out of it, and it's a game you need to focus on. So I'm going to play Elden Ring beginning to end, and I also need some other recommendations. So send me recommendations. I loved Hades. I loved Returnal. I'm sure I'm going to love Elden Ring. You know I love the Soulsborne games. Hit me with some recommendations. But Elden Ring is number one. I'm going to play it all. I'm going to finally play it. Maybe I'll stream it, you know?
Wow.
It's called, it'll be...
Something to look forward to, everyone.
Yeah, including me. It's just go to at lonely love it _ sad and alone on Twitch. And you'll find me there.
It seems like
you'll
a,
find
it
me
seems
there.
It's like a long handle.
Friday night, Saturday night.
Okay. Cinti Diaz asks, what non-crooked pods are you listening to? I got Ultra, the Rachel Maddow podcast, which is fantastic, we talked about before. On with Kara Swisher, The Ezra Klein Show, Hacks on Tap, The Watch from The Ringer, which does been doing great White Lotus recaps and a whole bunch of other shows, Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan, and Every Single Album, which is also on The Ringer. They do pop album reviews, which is really great. And I just started The Prince, which is about President Xi. It's an economist podcast. It's very, very good.
Come, that is fake. There's not a chance.
I was looking at the top podcast list because Mother Country Radicals made it, and number one was The Prince, and I was like, what's this all about? So then I started listening to it on the way home yesterday, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm into this. This is good.
For me, I love the podcast Unexplainable on Vox. Mm-hmm. They're just great looks at hard-to-answer or impossible-to-answer questions. And, you know, I'm just going to say, Ezra Klein puts together a great podcast.
He does.
I don't particularly like it when he says this episode is a gift. It's like, Ezra, don't tell.
Also, only one of them can be a gift. You can't have multiple gifts.
It's like, this conversation's a gift, that conversation's a gift. And sometimes it's like, what this philosopher tells us about trees has a lot to teach us about politics. You're like, I don't know. But I love it.
But this was a compliment.
I love it.
Dan?
The Watch, as John mentioned, from The Ringer. The Rates Ricky Sanchez, a Sixers podcast, which is helping me get through this miserable Sixers season. Hard Fork, which is the new tech podcast on the New York Times from Kevin Roos and Casey Newton, that is very good. I really like Recode Media, Peter Kafka's and media podcast. And then a bunch of sports podcasts like The Low Post, The Mismatch, The Mina Kimes Show, and a whole bunch of fantasy football ones until this season is over.
Heather Asher asks, what's your pre-podcast routine, i.e. the hour or so leading up to it? Love it. Why don't you kick us off?
So my alarm goes off. What day is it? What time is it? I shake off the Ativan. You got to shake it off. I check to see if there's a new message box to find out if I'm going to be able to... Crib, what's on message box? What do you do?
I finish figuring out what clips we're going to play, updating the question. I take notes for myself. I keep up with other breaking news. I caffeinate myself, and then I over-caffeinate myself. Then I drive to the office.
Figure we've been up for 5 hours. We've read all the news. We've had all the takes. What do we do for that last hour before we record at 10?
Dan and I start texting each other at 5 a.m.
Sometimes I miss really the window and my caffeine runs out before the podcast starts. Those are hard ones.
That's why Usually it's a morning coffee. I walk to Starbucks at 5 a.m. then when I drive to the office, sometimes I stop at Starbucks again on the way back, on the way to the office. Or now I've been getting Dunkin' too, which is great.
You know that people make coffee at home? I just found out about that. I couldn't
it's
believe
such
it.
A bore though. Then I don't get to walk.
But I don't
want to take a walk.
But I just don't understand. Like
the crisp air.
How? It requires everywhere. It's a whole building.
Do you think there are some people who make coffee at home that they might buy from a podcast company with branded coffee?
Oh yeah, again.
But that's where I found out about it, because people were talking about this crooked coffee, and I was like, you can do that at home. You mean you bring the beans to Starbucks? Okay. And they do something with these.
I'm in my home quite enough, thank you.
You know, we were young men.
I live
men
in
when
LA,
this,
but I live in walking distance to a Starbucks. So I'm going to take advantage.
We were young men when we started this podcast, waking up at 8, 7. Not anymore.
I was going to say it's
keeps getting earlier
getting
and earlier.
Rough, getting rough. All right, Instagram user. Dan, did you do? Oh, you didn't really do your hour before. What
that's it. I read the news.
That's it.
I read the news and I text with you, and then we talk into our microphone about the things we texted about.
Dan looks in the mirror and he just screams at the top of his lungs. He hits himself in the face.
I tap the sign above my office that says, pod like a champion today.
Instagram user Horner Caitlin asks, on any given day, how many dogs can be found in the Crooked office?
It's a menagerie. I mean, it's 6, 7 dogs.
Sometimes more dogs than employees.
Yeah. Yeah, the dogs are also on a hybrid schedule. And both the dogs and the staff have trouble counting to 3.
I think we're at like 3 or 4 on an average day.
On an average day, it's true. Pundit's here almost every day.
Lucinda's our new CEO. Her dog, Augie, is here
a horse. One of the biggest
like
dogs I've ever...
140 pounds.
One of the biggest, sweetest dogs I've ever seen in my life. Human eyes in that skull.
Just a wonderful dog. Leo and Luca don't really come anymore.
No.
But then everyone on the other side of the office, a bunch of dogs over there. We have so many dogs here that once, this was pre-pandemic, once there was a dog that just walked into my office and Lovett offices and Tommy's office, and we're like, whose dog is that? And we found out it was a dog that belonged to no one in the company. there was an office across the hall from us, and it just wandered
in.
It just wandered in. Yeah.
There's Iggy, there's Bruce, so many dogs.
Yeah, Sarah, our COO, had to draw up an office dog policy a couple years back.
Yeah. And then we punched it up. It was a little too... Wizard used to come in a lot.
She's like, I wasn't asking for edits.
This isn't funny.
Jesse Speaks asks, is Lovett right about LA having the best bagels?
Listen, I mean, Dan's San Francisco and John doesn't deal with carbs anymore. But
I'm trying to get back into carbs.
Yeah.
That's for the resolutions podcast.
Look, here's the thing. I'm a New Yorker by birth and constitution, and it doesn't bring me any pleasure to say that a Courage bagel beats every bagel in New York City. It's just the reality of our situation.
Wow.
Okay.
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 Speaking of food, Instagram user Crochet Anything asks, go to airport food? Bloody Mary?
Yeah, yours like Bloody Mary and a Xanax.
And then I'm in the place that I'm flying to.
And then I've arrived. We were on a flight once.
You see me on a plane, say hi.
Yeah, he won't remember. We were on a plane once, and John slept through a full-blown TikTok-worthy confrontation.
That's right.
He was fully passed out. There was seat switching. There was a two people brought on board. There was a flight attendant saying, you're welcome to get off. There was recrimination. There was another person brought in. He missed the whole thing. Tommy and I had to tell him about it later.
I had a great flight. We were going on vacation. We were not. It was not a work flight. Work flights are a little different.
Are they? Okay. Who are you saying that for?
I'm trying to prep for the live show. That's what happens on the work flight. Prep for the live show. All right. What about you guys? Go to airport food. Yours is something fried, I'm sure.
Look, here's the thing. I love a morning Sparrow slice. I know it's disgusting.
Oh my God.
I really do.
Holy shit.
I love a slice of Sparrow pizza in the morning. Perfect. Especially because usually in the morning, they're right out of the oven. You know, they haven't been sitting there all day. They're fresh. It's 10 a.m. Nobody's eaten this pizza yet. It's just me. It's just for me.
Damn. I'd say two things. One, if there's a Chili's at an airport, you will find me at that Chili's.
Same.
Two,
same.
the Dulles Airport, the United Terminal of Dulles Airport, which I have spent way too much time in recent years, is a food desert. It is terrible. It is hard to find food there, except for one loophole. By the D gates, there's a Potbellies. And that Potbellies serves the full menu starting at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. So why get a fattening breakfast sandwich when you can get the wreck at 7 a.m.?
We flew Dulles on our most recent trip to D.C. Man, that fucking airport. Don't miss that.
And I remember going out with you the night before. And so I imagine you would have enjoyed that Potbellies had you known about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was two times yes. D.C. ago. Yeah, that was tough. That was
trying to think of what other go-tos, but that's, I'm always happy to see Sparrows. I know it's sick, but it is true. It
legal seafoods in Logan.
There's also illegal seafoods. Wait, is there one at DCA now? Am I imagining that?
I think it is. It a legal seafoods or a McCormick and Schmidt's?
I don't know.
I don't know. Both. Same.
I don't know, but I'll eat
any kind
of
seafood restaurant at an airport.
Who decided what's a morning
seafood
food?
In an airport? Absolutely.
I don't accept this idea. Look, it's time we put aside this bygone notion that there's breakfast food and dinner food and lunch.
Especially
food.
At an airport where time doesn't. It's like inside an airport in a Vegas casino. Exactly. Yeah. Time doesn't matter.
Eggs are for breakfast? Why? Whose rule is that? Not mine.
Elliot Schneier asks, if you had to move to another country, not just for a while, immigrate, where and why?
So it's a practical issue for me in that I don't pick up languages. I've struggled my whole life. I was socially passed through Spanish in middle school and high school. So it does have to be in, a UK, in Australia, that's a Canada. I'm just limited. I'm just not going to pick it up.
You can't Rosetta Stone this once you get there.
I
don't know how. Under what circumstances you're leaving.
Yeah, they're urgent. I'll say that.
Am I fleeing prosecution, or do I have to work? So I don't have to worry.
Is it not an extradition?
If I am not fleeing,
there's no larger context here.
Yes, if I'm not fleeing prosecution, I am happily going to Canada. You get NBA basketball. You're not that far away. You don't have to pick up a language. The Canadians seem very nice.
I'm going to the Netherlands.
Huh?
Love. I'm going to go live in Amsterdam. That's it. I've been there a bunch. Like after we left the White House, I was like asked to speak there. And then for some reason, it's the only place I was asked to speak outside the country. And they would like keep asking me back. And so I'd like go every year for a couple of years. And just, first of all, they speak Dutch, obviously, but there's a lot of English. It's a very cosmopolitan city, so there's a lot of languages, but plenty of English there, so that's fine. And it's just, it's a beautiful place. Beautiful place, very walkable. They have like bike paths. It's great. I'm all in on Netherlands.
And once again, I'm going to thank the Tourism Bureau of the Netherlands for sponsoring this podcast. You can also get mushrooms at bars.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Finally, Sarah Sains asks, what organizations would you suggest people support as holiday gifts to others? Our friend Jose Andres runs a World Central Kitchen, which is helping to feed people all over the world. Right now, they're doing a ton of really great work in Ukraine. But they are everywhere there is a disaster or a war or any kind of conflict, World Central Kitchen is there, and they do an incredible, incredible job. So that's mine.
I'd like to end this podcast with a public service announcement, and it is this. If you want to be a path-breaking LGBTQ member of the Biden administration, I support you. And if there's something that also compels you to be a person that steals suitcases from his suitcase thing, even though you didn't check any baggage, I don't support that, okay? You're on your journey. You cannot do both, all right? You have to choose what kind of life you want to lead. You can either be someone who has stories written about you as the first, as a path-breaking member of the LGBTQ community, or you can be a person that goes up to suitcases you like and just goes yoink. But if you do both, it reflects poorly on the community. It leads to a lot of bad right-wing stories. Is the fact that you're gender fluid, does it have anything to do with the fact that you're stealing suitcases? No. Do straight people that look like John and Dan steal suitcases all the time? Absolutely. All right? But you just can't do both. You got to choose. Thank you.
Is this an organization that helps people who've lost their suitcases?
No, I'm not. That's just more of a public service announcement that's just something that I think was important to get in. Just because I see it going around.
Yeah. I hear that. I'm glad you did.
Thanks.
Look, that's important. Dan?
We always give, if you're in the Bay Area, to the Bay Area Crisis Nursery, which you can donate money and give toys and gifts and diapers and things to fit new families in need. That's where we give money. Also, Heifer International is something our kids often give to other kids. Our parents did it. It's also another great organization.
I'll do a real one. Okay. I'll do a real plug, which is we raise money for them with our Pride show this year, but support the Trans Lifeline. They do really good work and are there for trans people in their moments of most urgent need. So support Trans Lifeline.
That's great. All right, everyone. That's all the questions we got. That's all the questions we're answering.
Yeah, we got a lot of others that we're not answering.
Everyone have a happy holiday. Merry Christmas. And we'll talk to you soon.
I wonder if by the time this comes out, maybe Jennifer Coolidge died. We don't know.
What?
We don't know. I'm just saying, we won't know. We don't know.
I hope not.
Bye, everyone.
Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. The executive producer is Michael Martinez. Our senior producer is Andy Gardner-Bernstein. Our producers are Haley Muse and Olivia Martinez. It's mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis sound engineered the show. Thanks to Hallie Kiefer, Ari Schwartz, Sandy Gerard, Andy Taft, and Justine Howe for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Phoebe Bradford, Milo Kim, and Amelia Montooth. Our episodes are uploaded as videos at youtube.com/podsaveamerica.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.